You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC. And welcome to the KMC podcast. We're looking forward to this episode. We're going to be talking about all things volunteers, or I call it volunteers and more, all sorts of that kind of stuff. And we have got, for the first time on the KMC, Jessica Beeler joining us.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So we've had Frank, her husband, on, and he'll be on again. We're going to be doing another recording, another podcast with Frank. And Jim Weidman. So that we're going to get them double teaming.
Both on together.
Both on together. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait for that one. But it's so good to have Jessica. Jessica is a very talented Kidmin leader and is I've learned a ton about taking care of volunteers, recruiting volunteers, and now multi-site ministry. From her. And so we're going to have her give her information. But first, Jessica, in case some people don't know you in the KMC community, introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, so this is my 17th year in children's ministry. I started when I was 19, giving away my age there a little bit. But started when I was 19. My dad came to me and said, he was a church planner. I'm a PK, so I'm a preacher's kid. And he said, "Hey, Jess, I need you to take over and do some children's ministry with this new church." And I'm an only child, and I literally said to him, "Dad, I don't even like kids. I don't know anything about children. I don't want to do this." And he was like, "Well, you're the youngest person in the church right now." There was like, you know, a whole eight of us. And he said, "You're the youngest person in the church. I need you to go figure it out." And I was like, "Okay." And so he sent me to this little church that you might have heard called North Point. And he sent me to the Grow Up Conference, which, I mean, ultimately ended up being Orange. It was Reggie at the beginning. And so that's how it all started. I went there, got fired up about children's ministry, came back and started implementing all of the ideas and the strategy and all of that into this little church in East Tennessee. It was multi-site. So this is a while ago. That was kind of revolutionary, like multi-site, you know.
Yeah.
Years ago. And it ended up having three sites, about 700 people total. And in a really rural community, that was kind of a big deal. And so I've really only ever been at two churches. That's my beginnings. And then about 8 to 9 years into that, my husband, Frank, and I moved to Charlotte and got plugged in with a little church called Elevation Church. It's one of the fastest growing churches probably in the world at this point right now. And we got plugged in when there were about 2,000 people going to the church. And over the course of the last 8 years where we've been plugged in and then on staff with them, we got to see it grow from about 2,000 people to over 30,000 people. And I got to launch a bunch of locations with them. We went on staff shortly, and we were only in Charlotte for a year and really went on staff with them. And I've got to launch about 16 locations for them. And got to oversee a ministry of about 6,000 children and system standards, atmosphere. Those were all my specialties. And so, of course, multi-site doing all the launching. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 8 years. Recently, Frank and I just transitioned onto the Orange staff family. And we're really excited to be with them. Got a lot of great stuff going on with them. And so we're excited about this new season, but very thankful for both the initial one and then the last one too, because I feel like where I'm at now is a place where I'm able to relate to more churches because I've seen both the small town church versus, mm-hmm. you know, the what I think they call it, a giga church now. It's not a mega church. I think it's a giga church.
Wow.
So two opposite ends of the spectrum, but great experiences, both of them.
Yeah. Well, that is awesome. And so that's why I'm excited to have you on, because I know a lot of our listeners struggle in the area of strategy and of setting up structures, and especially when it comes to around volunteers. And a lot of our churches are going to be, you know, a lot of our listeners come in that smaller to medium size range church, and so that's the cool part, is while you've been part of such a huge church, I know you've because I've talked to you many times, you've worked with a lot of small churches because a lot of your startups are really small when they're really starting up.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Some of our, I think, yeah, go ahead.
Some of our smallest locations, I mean, when they first get started, I mean, we are looking at, you know, it's an extension site that will then become a location. And I mean, we're looking at the point when we start looking at them, they're normally about 100 people. And so, and then we try to help them transition to get to the point of being the size of a campus that we would actually call a campus and launch it officially. And so, yeah, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of smaller groups of people and get them to the point of where they're growing and thriving.
Yeah. So when you look at Kidmin leaders who are struggling with that, when they're in a small church and they're struggling for volunteers, what's some of the things that they could start looking at right away? What's some of that advice you'd give them in a smaller church that's kind of, they're lacking the volunteers? Where would you start with them?
Yeah, so this is a question that has probably been asked the most of me. I mean, I was in charge of, I had a lot of different roles at Elevation, not just Kidmin. I did social media and other things, but one of my roles was handling church inquiries. And so all the churches that called in that had a question, like, what are you doing here? Or how do you manage this? Or those were mine. They ended up with me. And the number one question that I got was, how do you get volunteers? Yep. And so I feel like that's exactly where we need to start, because I feel like that's probably where most people are. And I'll just tell you, like, even when you have, we had, when I stepped away from Elevation about 6 months ago, we had approximately 2,500 volunteers. And I know that sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but when you're, you know, when you have a church of 30,000 and it's growing, we never had enough volunteers. I mean, that is a season that you just perpetually live in. You never have enough. And so, you know, whether you're a small church or a large church, we all live in that season. So let's talk really quick about some things that I would just kind of advise. Like, if I was coaching someone, if I was consulting with someone, I would always start by saying, is your ministry attractive? Because I feel like you have to have an attractive ministry or people aren't even going to be interested in plugging into it. I mean, nobody wants, you know, to get into a dirty car, and nobody wants to get into an ugly ministry. And so is your ministry attractive? And the way I say that is, you know, are your volunteers smiling? Are they you know, happy to be there? Are you presenting your best foot forward in the main worship experience? So do you have opportunities to present children's ministry in any way, whether that be you leading talking points from the stage as the children's director, or whether that's a video on the screen? Whatever it is, are you putting your best foot forward? And you have to look at your environments. You know, so many times, I've done it so many times. I'll walk into a room, and you know, the first time you walk into it, you notice that the little car track toy is kind of leaning to the side, and the chairs are a little wobbly, and you know, there's some marks and some scuffs on the wall. And then the second week, you know, you walk in and you're like, oh, I've got to get to those things. You know, you're still noticing them. But by the fifth, sixth, 10th, 12th time that you're walking into that room, it's just normal now, and you don't see it anymore.
Right.
Well, I always encourage people to, like, arrange a secret shopper. Have someone walk through your ministry that has never laid eyes on it and let them pick it apart, because then you're going to see what's actually standing out to the parents and the families that you're serving. If you have a healthy, attractive ministry, the parents that are dropping off their kids, not every parent, but a lot of them are going to want to plug in because their kids are going to be getting in the car talking about how fun it is. And then you're going to be like, oh, I want to be a part of that. I mean, I always want to do something fun. And so I would say start by making your ministry attractive. That's your starting point.
Okay.
And it's got to be both with language, how your staff is talking about it, how you're talking about it, how your volunteers are talking about it, both within the church and outside of the church. But it also has to be a physical attractiveness as well. Like, you have to actually be able to walk in and be like, this looks nice. I would want to be here. I would want to volunteer here. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. No, I love that. I hadn't even thought about that idea of, you know, how does your staff talk about it to other people?
Right.
You know, that's a good thing to talk through with them is how, you know, how do you share what you do every Sunday? Because a lot of people, you know, they do have misconceptions about what it's like to serve in children's ministry. There's no doubt.
Right. And, you know, just some practical, because I live in practical. I'm going to go practical a lot during this broadcast. I love to just go ahead and type up the things that I want my staff to say, whether it's my staff and their children's directors, or whether it's the staff that I'm working alongside, so more peer level, I would just type them up either on business cards or little handouts, something like that, mm-hmm. and give it to them and say, when you're talking about it, when you meet a mom at Target, or when you're standing in the foyer and you a child is walking out, this is what I want you to say. These are the key words. So we would always say that on the weekends, we're engaging kids, and throughout the weeks, we're empowering families. Well, I want the staff of my church to know that language so very well. We had four kind of key statements, and they kind of went in order of importance. And one of them was about safety, and one of them was about bringing fun and making it fun. One of them was connecting with families, and then one of them was about sharing the love of Jesus. And I wanted all of our staff to be very, very familiar with that language where they could spew it out at any moment. And so that was really important. You know, one of the things that you can do as a ministry, if you want to get church staff talking about your ministry on Sundays, on the weekends, mm-hmm. we used to have this little, it was called eKids in a Flash. It was kind of like a brochure type, but it didn't fold. So just take a piece of paper and we would put three different on and just cut it up. It was always in-house. We didn't have them professionally printed. And it was all the things that were going on the weekend. So it would say in our baby and toddler area, which we called Safari, in our baby and toddler, they're learning about Jonah and the whale. They're going to be walking out with a coloring sheet. Here's the Bible verse that they've talked about. In our preschool area, they're saying a memory verse today for a prize. If a child has a red cape on, they said their memory verse. And then we went all the way through elementary and we gave them little key talking points, things that they could talk about. And on Sunday mornings, we would go around and we would pass them out to all of our staff. And we would say, hey, glance over these and then, you know, pull it out. I actually saw Joel Delf, who is the campus pastor at our Blakeney, Elevation Blakeney location. I still say our because it's always going to be my church. I love, love, love them forever. And Joel, I actually watched him once. He saw a family coming. It was the morning where the child was earning a red cape. It was a superhero series and they were earning a red cape if they memorized their memory verse. And he sees this child walking through the foyer with the red cape, and he knows it means something. He doesn't know exactly what it means, but he knows it means something. So he kind of stepped behind the pole. There was like a big pole, and kind of stepped behind the pole, and I watched him pull it out of his pocket, read it, put it back in his pocket, and then he's walked back around it, and he was like, you memorized your memory verse. And of course, the kid's like, oh my gosh, the campus pastor knew that I memorized my memory verse? Because, you know, the kid's not putting it all together.
Yeah.
So it's just a little practical piece to get your campus staff talking about the great things that are going on in your ministry and making your ministry more attractive.
That is fantastic. I mean, man, those are some great practical tips, Jessica. And some stuff that I'm like, wow, okay, I can use that in the future for sure.
Some other things. I mean, I have other things.
Give us some more.
So if you're lacking volunteers and you're in a smaller church, and I mean, I think even in you and I talked about, you know, a lot of smaller churches have small pools of people.
They pull from. Yep.
And you know, one of the things that I would just say, if you're lacking volunteers, is do less. And I know most people are like, wait, what? What are you actually telling me to do less work? I'm not telling you to do less work. I'm telling you to do less things, less stuff. We have a saying that we can do more by doing less. And I feel like we spread ourselves way too thin, and then we can't do a few things with excellence. I have a son right now who has just decided that he's going to play football. Now, he's a 10th grader. He's never played football a day in his life. He loves to watch football, so he knows the rules, but he doesn't know plays. He doesn't even know the positions. He just likes to watch it on television. And so we were touring his school a couple weeks ago, and the football coach was standing in the foyer, and he walks up to my son and goes, you play football? Now, just a little backstory. My son grew about a foot in the last 18 months. So he is technically, he's 14 years old. He like skipped a grade when he was little. And so he's 14 years old, but he's a 10th grader, but he's 6'1" and 185 pounds. I mean, this is a built boy.
Wow. Yeah.
And so the football player or the football coach walks over to him and says, hey, you play football. And he's like, no, I play basketball. He'd been working out with the basketball team. And he said, no, you play football. And he was like, no, I play basketball. And he's like, no, you're going to play football. I need you at practice in the morning at 8 a.m. Go CVS, get your physical done and be at practice in the morning. And so we did that. We came home, we talked about it. He's like, sure, I'll go. I mean, I'll go try it. He's very athletic. And so we go, we try it out. And he's like out there on the field and he's, you know, trying out the different positions. He has no idea. They finally decide that they're going to plug him in at the position of tight end. Well, the opposite side of the ball is defensive end. If you know anything about football, the two sides are tight end for offense and defensive end for defense. And on the JV team, which is what he's going to play, he's the biggest boy. I mean, he's a big boy on the JV team. And so they said to him, I think we're going to have you play both sides of the ball. Now, my dad is a former college ball player, and my dad heard this and was like, no. He cannot play both sides of the ball. They have to pick one. And I was like, well, no, it'll be great. I mean, he needs more exposure to the field. And my dad was like, no, he doesn't. He needs to focus on one thing and be excellent at that one thing. He's going to be out there. He's going to be trying to learn two different positions. He's going to have his focus all over the place. He's going to end up being a good football player instead of a great tight end or defensive end. And he was right, and now they've quickly moved him into tight end. But how often do we do that in our ministry, right? I mean, we're like, I'm going to be good at everything. We're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do VBS, and we're going to do camp in the summer, and we're going to have a Wednesday night program, and then we're going to have a Thursday night out for parents for date night, and then we're going to have, you know, Mondays with moms. And before you know it, you're doing 20 things, and you're doing them at a you know, moderate or okay level, where if we would just cut out most of the other things, focus on what's most important, which to me is children's programming, small groups, connecting with families, right? And that mostly happens on the weekends. I mean, I'm not saying that you can't do a midweek programming, but for the most part, the most important thing that we do happens on Sunday mornings, right? Mm-hmm. Or Saturday nights for some of us. And that's what we need to focus the majority of our efforts instead of trying to divide our focus. So I would say do more by doing less, and that's going to require you to have less volunteers, because anytime you do anything, now you need more people. Instead, take the great volunteers that you have, coach them, train them up, and focus all of their efforts on the one thing that's most important.
Yeah. And I know when I've been helping and coaching leaders, I've heard that same thing, that, well, we're so busy and, well, I want to do this and I want to do that. And hey, I know that personality. I'm always one of those, I want to do more kind of people.
Yeah.
But I agree. I've learned this lesson that, you know what? There's that saying, you know, jack of all trades and master of none.
Right. Exactly.
I don't want to be that.
Right.
I want to be the master of something. And I think that's the mistake that, you know, small churches, medium-sized churches, we see the mega church or the giga church doing all that stuff and think, well, that's what we have to do to get that size.
Right.
And I honestly think that's the wrong logic.
It totally is. Completely. I completely agree with you. Yeah. I think so many times it's funny, cause I did a podcast a couple of days ago. We had a whole conversation about this exact topic, in that people say all the time, you know, how did you get there, or where did you get there, or what are you using now? And I always want to tell people, well, you can't be where I am right now, and you can't be where the church next. You need to just be where you are and be in the season that God has placed you in. Because even at Elevation, when people would go on a tour, I would tell them, well, we are where we are right now in year 9 or year 8 or year 10. That's where we are. But in year 3, we weren't here. I mean, we looked very different. And honestly, if we were there now, we'd look back and we would laugh and think, oh my gosh, what were we thinking? But we had to go there before we could get to year 8, 9, or 10. And so just be where you are. Don't try to be anyone else. And I do think that if you will just zone in on what's most important and spend the majority of your efforts on what's most important, you'll get to where you want to be. But right now, you just need to be where you are and be who God's made you to be in this season.
Right. And so that kind of leads me into the next question. We kind of started talking about this idea. So what do leaders seem to fail to consider when they are recruiting, when they are doing this strategy planning kind of things? What have you been seeing?
Yeah. So most of the time, if you're recruiting, if you're in a recruiting season, it's because you're in a deficit, right? I mean, nobody goes into a recruiting season and they're like, all our positions are filled. Yay. Everybody. I mean, I don't even know a church that has all their positions filled, but we'll pretend that there's, you know, a perfect one out there. But I think that, you know, if you're in a recruiting season, it's because you have a deficit of human resources. You need people, and you need people in positions, and you need them there yesterday. And so a few of the mistakes that I have made in the past, I've watched other leaders make, I've watched my campus directors make, is they will hold some kind of recruitment initiative. They'll get some people to go through, you know, the volunteer training thing that we have for them. And then they immediately plug them in, and it's almost like a checkbox. Oh, I've got a volunteer in place. Whew, now I can focus in on something else. And I'll just tell you, when you do that, you are absolutely guaranteeing their failure. Like, if you don't follow back up with them, if you don't, you know, help them transition into the sweet spot. And let me tell you why I feel like it's going to fail. First of all, they don't know anything about your ministry. They don't have the vision. They don't have heart of the house yet. They are brand spanking new. And all of those things come with time. But on the other side, the volunteers that you do have, they are dry and weary because they've needed people for a really long time. And now someone new is here. And they just are like, oh, finally, here's half of my kids. Take them, you know? And so this new person is coming in, and they're not being supported by their peers around them because the peers are just like, finally, some relief. Right. And at the same time, they're being thrown into it. They're probably being given too much responsibility, too much authority, you know, all of it coming at them at one time because you've been in this deficit. And so we like fail to consider that there's a transition period. Like, and so we just are like, stick them in a position and check that box off and move on. And we have got to get into a place where we are walking alongside them for weeks, maybe even months, depending on how old they are, their exposure to children, their exposure to ministry, you know, at Elevation. Now, not in a teaching role, but at Elevation, you didn't have to be a Christian to serve. And that's kind of revolutionary. And I know there's lots of differing opinions on that. Now, we're not ever going to put those people in a teaching position. Obviously, they're never going to be a small group leader. But, you know, it's okay if you enter data. That's fine. You know, you can do that without being, you know, you don't have to be a Christian. And a lot of times those people would end up coming to Christ because they're being surrounded by people who are very dedicated Christians. And so you didn't have to be. So, you know, if you've never even been exposed to church life or church culture, to stick them in a position and then expect them to just know it all, I mean, they're going to burn out. They're going to feel foolish. They're going to get embarrassed. And then they're going to disappear and you're never going to see them again. And now you've actually put systems into place around this person being there. And now your deficit is a disaster because before you were just, you know, at a deficit. Now your people, the ones who've been hanging on, they finally got some relief. And now when you pile it back on them, it's just backbreaking. It's like, I just got the relief. Now you're giving it back to me. And then those people are going to walk away as well. And so we have to transition them. And I know that you believe in coaching as well. And I feel like one of the things that we can do to kind of offset this trend of just, you know, transitioning them and putting them in a position is we can actually create coaches. We had a coaching model. We kind of walked away from training a few years ago when we went to strictly a coaching model, which is a one-on-one or a, you know, a one-on-three. So maybe we'd have a coach sit with three different small group leaders on a Sunday morning. And then afterwards, give them immediate feedback. You did great at this. You did great at this. You did great at this. I'd work on this. You know, we only ever gave them one constructive criticism. And we gave them lots of affirmation, but I feel like if you feel supported in a position, you're given the amount of time to acclimate. But if you're not, if you're just thrown in there, before long, you're going to be feeling foolish, like you're not making a difference, and you're going to walk away from it. So as you're transitioning people into your ministry, you've got to walk alongside them for a while. And also, you need to find their sweet spot. I know that a lot of churches, I mean, I even did it at once. I'm definitely a culprit when it comes to this, have taken the mindset of, well, you have a kid back here, you need to serve. Well, I don't ever want anyone working with my kids that doesn't want to work with my kid.
Right, now, exactly. I mean, because a sure way to get them to quit.
And kids know, they totally pick up on those negative vibes. And so I only want people that want to be back there. And so, I mean, honestly, give me one good leader versus five cold bodies any day. Like, I would much rather have one good leader. And so, so you need to find people, help them, transition them into their ministry. But that doesn't mean that they're always going to stick. But it doesn't mean that they should walk away either. If they're not sticking, then you go back to them and say, okay, let's try something different. This isn't your sweet spot. You know, this is something else, and this is someone else's sweet spot. Let's go find yours, and we'll transition you to another team or another area. Maybe in children's ministry, may not be in children's ministry. And a lot of times, that feels like a competition, right? I can't lose them to the parking team. I need every volunteer. But you're going to lose them ultimately anyways, if they're not called to be in that position. Right. And so you have to transition them on, and you have to make sure after a little while, 2, 3, 4 weeks, that they're actually enjoying themselves. That this is where they're supposed to be and where God has called them to be.
Yeah. So, and I know, because we've talked about this in the past, I've heard you speak on setting up a solid, you know, I think one of the things that leaders don't do is they don't even really know who they're looking for to begin with. They just know they want a body.
Yes.
And I know you focus a lot on structures. I didn't throw this question at you, so I'm throwing a little curveball to you, but I know you can handle this one. Awesome. But so what would be your advice to someone who they know they need 5 or 6 people? What process should they be thinking through before they even start recruiting? Because I think that's where we set our own selves up to fail. Because we go on Pinterest and we see some great idea of, oh, this other church did this recruiting campaign. It looked like it worked. So I'm just going to dive in on it. But there's a lot of stuff that people need to be thinking through before we even get to the actual asking of a person to join the team. Yeah. Help somebody think through that concept of what's the onboarding process look like, and what could they, you know, if it's just them right now leading the team, they don't really have any other coaches, but they know they need to get some coaches. What would they do before they even get to that point?
Yeah. So I think that you've got to start by sitting down with your staff as a whole. Like too often in children's ministry, we silo ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, oh, the church is over here with all of the different ministries of the churches. And then over here is children's ministry. And I feel like it has to start by having a very unified strategy as a church as a whole. So I feel like that really means getting all of your staff sitting around a table. And sometimes that means that you're going to have to make some concessions, because you may want a strategy that looks like this. But honestly, it's more important that your strategy as a church whole is healthy is when it comes to recruiting and then onboarding volunteers. And so I think you have to make some concessions. Let me give you an actual example so you'll understand what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. At Elevation, we had something called 101, and that was our volunteer onboarding track. And so if you were during every worship experience, people are told, hey, if you want to get plugged in, then go to the orange tent. And the orange tent is our guest services area. It was a big orange tent that sits either inside or outside the building. And they'd say, go to the orange tent and sign up. They'd go to that orange tent and they'd sign up, and then they would get plugged into an E101. E101 was one Sunday. It was kind of a long 3 or 4 hour experience. It did include a worship experience. So you kind of got your church in the midst of it. But it was one day that you went to, and then you kind of got plugged into everything. Well, it didn't exactly work. So when we started like kind of tweaking, because 101's been called everything. It was called boot camp at one point. It was called first experience. The names are always changing. Yeah. 101 is what it is now. But as we were kind of working with that and transition, or working with that system, that strategy, there were some things that inside of it that didn't quite work with children's ministry. Because they would come in at one point and they would present all of the different areas that you could volunteer in. So you could volunteer in parking, you could volunteer in eKids Empowerment Headquarters, which is where the food is served. You could volunteer in guest services, you could volunteer at the orange tent, you know, and receive people. So there's all these different positions. And then you would get to children's ministry and they'd say, or you can volunteer in children's ministry. Okay. Well, there's only about 20 roles in children's ministry.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Everything from the baby room all the way to production. I mean, we have production people that run cameras and so just saying, you know, hey, here's children's ministry. Here's a little, no, that didn't really work. And so, when we sat down with that meeting with our church staff as a whole, we were like, you know, this isn't really like saying who we are. And they were like, but Jessica, we can't go in. I mean, we literally have like 18 different positions that you could be in. And they were like, we don't have time to go through 18 positions. Anybody who's not interested in children's ministry, these are all the people who are getting ready to sign up. They're going to zone out and get bored. So we can't just sit there and go through all 18 positions. What do we need to do? And I really, at that point, I mean, everything inside of me was like, don't you understand? Like these people may choose a different area because they don't know. Like they may go to regular production when they love kids and they would do great. But if I don't hit on production, they're not even going to know we have it. They're just going to do production. And so everything inside of me was like, no, we need to talk about all 18 positions. but I quickly began to realize that the onboarding process as a whole was actually, you know, pretty efficient. And I had to get on board. And so what did that mean? And so I kind of narrowed it down and I said, okay, here's what I'd like to say. I know you give all the other areas 2 minutes. I'd like to have 4 minutes. Can I have double the amount of time that everybody else gets to talk about their different, give me just 4 minutes. So I get a little bit more time, but I'm not taking what's 2 times 18. I'm not taking 36 minutes, you know? And so they said, okay, we can do that. And, you know, I worked it to where, I mean, I know this is going to be funny and everybody's going to, that's listening is going to laugh, but I didn't have time to hit on babies. And so I would go get a sleeping baby and I would just hold them in my hand when I was standing in front of people. And so I would never even talk to them. I would never even talk about the baby room, but I'm holding a baby. So they knew that obviously babies was an option, you know? And so we do that. And then, you know, I'd always bring my production guy in and I'd say, you know, there's all these different people you can, you know, we've got Sam in production and Sam is like a, you know, 20 something year old. So any 20 something year olds that I have out there are immediately attracted to Sam. And so essentially all I did was I worked what I needed to happen into the system that was already there and was working as a church. And then our strategy as a church whole was very united and our system was very, very efficient. And so I would say your starting point is uniting your systems as a whole so that your church strategy is efficient and not just, you know, you're not just trying to work one area and recruit just for children's ministry. Because honestly, like your church is, even if you're if you've got a great recruitment plan in children's ministry, if it's struggling everywhere else, and eventually that's going to roll over and hurt your ministry as well.
Right. And you know, like I know that, you know, when you're in a smaller church, you do have a limited pool of volunteers. And so you've got the youth people trying to pull people in. You've got the music team, worship team trying to pull people in. Yeah, you've got, you know, so you're saying that basically if you can get everybody to sit down on, you know, around the table and kind of hash out, here's how we're going to do this. You know, everybody comes to one. So you really advocate one place to sign up.
Yep.
I love that. I think even a small church can have a table where this is where everybody comes and everybody knows at that table what the jobs are that you're looking for. So how important is it for a leader to really then iron out? I mean, it really is important is what I'm thinking, to iron out all the positions and the job descriptions. How do you know how much detail to give?
This is a great question, because I feel like sometimes we give too much detail and then sometimes we don't give enough detail. And so we'll stick somebody in a room and we'll be like, just play with toddlers, you know? But there are so many procedures and things, safety procedures about how you transition kids to the bathroom and how you change a diaper and who can change a diaper. And so a lot of times we don't set them up for success because they're in the middle of making a mistake when we're like, oh, you're making a mistake, you know? And so I feel like that we can do a lot better at that. I feel like as much detail as you can give someone once they've chosen your ministry, as much detail as you can give them, the better. Give them the guidelines, give them the box to work within, because we all have a box, right? I mean, we all have rules that we have to abide by. We have a budget that we have to live within. You know, we only have so many volunteers. Well, your volunteers are the same way. They have a box. You've created it. It's all the guidelines, the safety procedures, you know, the things that are regulated by the state, the government, all that kind of thing. You need to give them all of that, but only once they've signed up for your ministry. They don't need to know all of the details. They don't need to know that, that, you know, like only a 16-year-old can change diapers. Although if you had a 15-year-old, they might sign up if you told them that. They wouldn't have to change diapers. Ironically, it's how we got most of the guys to sign up for babies and toddler ministry. We would say to them, you know, guys don't change diapers, no diapers. And they'd be like, really? Okay, I'll come and play with
you. Okay, toddlers. I'm in.
Yeah. But you don't have to give them all those details on the front end.
Right.
On the front end, you're just casting vision. So you're just saying, like, so if you've got someone sitting in front of you and they know they want to be in children's ministry or they think they do, but they don't know exactly what area, I would start probably by saying, so what are you interested in? Do you like just playing with kids? Like, do you like getting in the floor and playing with them? Or do you like rowdy games? Because if you like rowdy games, we have a large group that's amazing with rowdy games. Or are you technologically savvy? You know, and so it's more just like giving them an overview of the different areas and not all the details. Now, once they've picked an area, you got to disclose everything. And I always say it's got to be on paper. It's not official unless it's on paper. And
right.
So if you have 18 different positions in your ministry, you better have 18 job descriptions. Because if you don't, you are setting them up for failure because you're not even giving them the guidelines.
Right. Excellent. So All right. So let's say we've got them on the team now.
Okay.
We want to keep them on the team.
Yes.
How, what are some of the ways that you found, because I think every leader wonders, you know, I mean, I know for me, I would struggle with, okay, is this little thank you idea a good one? Yeah. Or are people going to look at it and go, wow, that's really lame. I mean, cause I've no offense to people out there, but I've seen them on enough Facebook forums. You know, they're like, oh, this is what I'm doing for our volunteers. And I look at that and go, wow, that's a real, it's cute.
Right.
But I mean, I know when you're, at least when I'm trying to think of how do I get more guys involved in uh-huh. kids ministry? There's some of those kind of thank you things that are just like,
yeah, little pots with flowers and stuff.
Yeah. Leave it on Pinterest, ladies. Leave it on Pinterest. That's
I'm with you. Well, and so I think one thing, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because really what you're saying is the thing that I'm about to say. And that is that we have very, very unique individuals that are serving on all of our teams. I mean, we're going to have the 35-year-old mom of three who you know, spends most of her time in, you know, in her minivan rushing people around. And then we're going to have the CEO executive who, you know, he has time to serve during one experience every other week because he's, you know, he's on a plane all the time and he's going to have that. And then you're going to have the 14-year-old kid who's grown up in church and knows everything about that. And you're going to have very, very unique individuals with unique circumstances and unique seasons of life. And yet most of our efforts for volunteer appreciation are very unified, they're just the same. Like, we do the same thing for everyone. And so we've got all these unique individuals, and yet we'll say, hey, let's make flowers and give them to all of the women. Like let's pot some flowers and give them to all the women in our ministry. Well, really what you're doing is you're equalizing them all. And you and I both know that not all volunteers are equal.
Right.
I mean, you have some star volunteers, and then you have some that you're just hoping and praying that they show up every once in a while, you know? and so when you are giving that star volunteer who literally is slaving away next to you in the, you know, ditches of ministry, if you're giving them a potted plant and then right next to them, you're giving the person, oh, they just happened to be here today. It's the first time they showed up in 6 weeks, but here's your plant. You're essentially saying your efforts are equal, and they're not. They're not equal, you know, they're not equal to you. They're not even equal in the sight of God. I mean, you better believe that God is more pleased with the person who is, you know, committing their life to. And so yet we equalize them by giving them all the same thing. I wrote an article called Death to Volunteer Banquets. I know somebody's going to be like, what? We have the most awesome volunteer banquet ever. Maybe you do. I mean, I could be wrong. But I used to do a volunteer banquet at the church with at my dad's church. And inevitably, about a week before, I would have people say, Jessica, I love you and thank you for doing this for me, but I just don't have a dress and I don't have the money to go buy a dress, or I'm just not a fancy person. Like, I don't know what to do with the extra fork. And, you know, I even had one volunteer say, I don't like eating in front of people. Like, it makes me nervous. It makes me anxious to eat in front of people. And so over the years, I actually got to thinking, well, I don't think that half of the people that are here or even actually want to come to this thing. And it's not because that they don't love what they do. And it's not because they're not appreciative of it. It's because it's not unique. I'm essentially equalizing every single volunteer on my team. And so I always encourage people to make your efforts unique. Appreciate on an individual or a team basis. If you have a team that's killing it, that's fine. Then honor that whole team. Like, if you have a small group team at the 9:30 worship experience or the 9:30 service, the fifth grade, whatever, those 2, 3, 5 volunteers, whatever it is, they're doing incredible. Well, that's fine. Send them to the movies on the church. Whatever, that's fine. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is when we do one thing and we say, you're all the same. And I just don't feel, Jesus didn't treat people that way. He was very, very, you know, direct to the people that he was speaking to, and he spoke to their needs. And I think that we need to do the same when we're appreciating mm-hmm. our volunteers. If we want to have them around for a long while, then we need to know them, know who they are, what they like, the things that, you know, makes them tick, what actually serves as a source of encouragement, and what serves as, you know, a source of discouragement. And so I feel like if we can just take a more unique, individualized approach to volunteer appreciation, number one, it'll cost us less money, and number two, it'll be more effective.
Yeah. I heard you and Frank share a little bit about this, and you gave me two ideas, and I got to say, they worked absolutely incredibly.
Awesome. Yay.
The one was texting your volunteers. I was in a breakout and Frank literally made us get our phones out and text one person.
Yep.
And I will never forget that moment because I thought, oh, all right, I actually was being the cynical one. And so I picked one of my volunteers that I thought there's no way they're going to respond. I knew people that I know if I did text them, they'd respond.
Yeah.
Because they always respond when I text them. But I'm like, I'm going to go after a volunteer that never responds.
Yep.
And they did. And it blew them away. I mean, they not only shot me a text right back that was, they were all excited that I thought of them and at that moment, but then on that next Sunday, they made sure that they came up and thanked me again. And it was just like, wow. Okay. Thank you, Frank and Jessica. That was awesome. The other one was getting to know my volunteer enough that I actually did a real quick survey and I asked them what their favorite candy bar was.
Yes.
And then I made that list. And then I don't remember if it was Christmas or what. I don't remember. But I went out shopping and bought everybody their own individual candy bar.
Yeah.
All unique. And so, and we were having a morning huddle, and that's when I knew I was going to have to pass them out them. It wasn't the most ideal because I would rather have done it individually that morning. But you know what? The reaction of them each realizing that I went and got individual candy bars and not the same thing was huge.
Yes.
So
it's so true. I equate it to that moment on the Santa Claus movie, you know, when he stands up and he's passing out the presents and all the people are like, wait, you know me? Like, you
oh
know,
yeah.
You know what I, teachers, you know what I like? Thing. Yeah. And it's so true though, because our people, they don't, whether you're a small church or a big church, they don't expect you to remember them. And when you do, it is huge. You know, one of the things that I do love the favorites form. Man, anytime you can find out and just file it away, then you already have it. One of the things that that I love to do is I love to make the most of my drive time. So I will take my phone, and I have one of those magnetic things, you know, that you can just put your phone right there.
Yeah.
Literally while I'm driving, I'll say, hey, Siri, can you, or hey, Siri, text Tosca and tell Tosca that she did such a great job with, and I will literally just sit as I'm driving and just text using my, so I'm just using my, I'm not being, putting anyone in danger. I'm just using my drive time to appreciate my volunteers on an individual basis. Never let that, man, I'm telling you, I get so much done and Frank is the master. I learned it from him. He's the master at doing stuff during drive time. But use that drive time and just send out individual notes and send out individual texts. And one thing, just a little to get even more specific, don't just tell someone they're doing a good job. Great job this weekend. That's good. It's better if you said, hey, I noticed that crying child that was really struggling to transition at the door and you went above and beyond. That really made a difference for that family. Thank you for caring about the ministry. And then they're like, whew, wow, they noticed me. And then they're going to want that same praise again, right? They want that positive affirmation. They're going to do it again. And that's what you want. You want them to just continue to repeat that. So anytime you can be more specific with your praise to the individual, I say go for it. One other thing that I did that I loved is I wrote little notes to volunteers and I put them in a balloon. So just a little note. I mean, I'm talking cheap stuff. Like and I wrote little personalized notes and I stuck them in a balloon and I put helium in the balloon. So we rented a tank and you can get them cheap at Walmart or Party City if you want a small one. And we went and we tied them to the cars in the parking lot. Not all of them, but you know, five or six a week. And so as families are coming out, as other volunteers are coming out, they keep looking over at the car and they're like, why does that car have a balloon on it? I don't know. Why are there a few? And so you're essentially acknowledging them in front of their peers. And then when they get to the car at the end of the day, there's a party on the car. There's a balloon. They're going to get the balloon out. Notice there's an individual note inside the balloon. And then you're thanking them. So the last thing that they are thinking when they're pulling away from your ministry is not, ooh, one more day done. They're like, man, I love Tom. I just love that he appreciates me so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that's just an easy way to make them feel good about your ministry when they're leaving.
Yeah. And all of that, I think, and I'm pretty sure you'd agree then, that's going to lead you into more powerful recruiting too.
For sure. Oh, for sure. They're going to go and talk about it. You're going to go talk about your ministry. That is making your ministry more attractive. I mean, that's what it is. They are so impressed by your ministry, impressed by you. There's relational equity there. They're willing to go to the ends of the earth for you. And you better believe they're going to be talking about you and your ministry and the ministry that, you know, God has given you out in the community, whether they're at work or, you know, with family at dinner that day, whatever it is, they're going to be talking about it.
Yeah. Well, man, Jessica, we're definitely going to have to get you back on, and because there's way more subjects to talk about, especially because I know you and Gina McLean have a new book coming out. So tell us a little bit about that, because then we're going to have to bring you back on to KMC, but get both of you guys on to talk about it. But tell us a little bit about what that is.
Yeah. So the book is actually called Don't Quit. But it has a little tagline, and it's called It's Monday, I Quit. Because, right, if you're in children's ministry, Monday morning you wake up and you're like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Because, you know, you've had issues from the weekend. You may have had a run-in with a fellow staff member. You've got some parent that, you know, you gave their kid the wrong bottle. Now you got to make a follow-up call. And it's just yucky. Mondays are yucky. But the book Don't Quit is essentially, it's tips, advice, things that Gina have learned. Together, we have over 35 years in ministry, in children's ministry. And so it's about not quitting. It's not just for those in children's ministry. It's more just like larger concepts, things like volunteer appreciation, the stuff that we were just talking about, or how to have a healthy conflict, because most people aren't good with conflict. It makes them very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And yet it's so absolutely necessary to pushing your ministry forward. And so there's a whole chapter dedicated into healthy conflict. And so there's things like that, like how to stick with it, and just tips, you know, tips and things that we've learned to help you stay in it for the long haul.
Awesome. And that's one of my passions, is helping people do this. So
right. Yeah. And it's coming out on September the 8th.
Okay.
So you'll be able to get it at orangebooks.com, or you can get it on Amazon. It'll be on Amazon. And then of course it's going to be, Orange is getting ready to go on tour, 20 different cities this fall. And I'll be on tour with them. Gina will as well. And you can get it at tour, whether we're at your stop or not, the book will be available at tour as well.
Awesome. Oh, I may just have to go find a tour stop close by me so I can grab the book.
For sure.
But yeah, we will definitely get you guys back on. So Jessica, if people want to follow up and throw some questions at you, how could they do that?
Yeah. So I have a site. It used to be mine and Frank's, and now Frank is doing his own thing. And so now it's just mine.
Just admit it. You kicked him off.
I did. I just kicked him off. But it's called familyministry.church. So familyministry.church is where you can go. And there's all kinds of, there's multi-site, there's leadership stuff on there, all kinds of different articles on there that they can tune in and read. But you can also contact me through there. So if you want to pair up and do some coaching or consulting, or if you just have a, you know, hey, I've got one question about something that you talked about, what do you do in the situation? I'd be happy to help you. I'm also on Snap Advice. I just was approved as an advisor on Snap Advice, which is a new up and coming company. It's on, you can download the app. And so if you want like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour of my time, you can just sign up for Snap Advice. It's super, I mean, like you don't actually have to pay to download the app or anything, but you can contact me through there as well. And we can actually have an in-depth one-on-one conversation through that as well. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Jessica. We really appreciate you being on the KMC.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.